Chapter 3, 1935. Sam's business, the Rugby Structural Corporation, had stayed afloat during the Depression, but constantly had to evolve in order to stay in business. Back in the boom days of the 1920s, the company had started off building warehouses and wharves, then moved on to building houses. Then in 29, the stock market crashed, and within a few months, a lot of people lost their jobs. And those who were still employed couldn't get mortgages because so many banks had collapsed. No one was buying houses anymore. And instead, people had to move in with family or share small tenement apartments. So Sam had shifted into building and repairing bridges and large public and commercial buildings. It helped that many of those were government projects. Even so, Rugby had barely scraped by, and there were two winters where the family had to wear newspaper in their shoes to stay warm, because Sam couldn't pay for enough coal to keep the furnace going all day. Then in 34, Roosevelt had set up the Federal Housing Administration. It gave Rugby steady work building private homes in the suburbs. Things were definitely looking up. Mac helped him with the business and worked alongside his other employees, but he was best at drumming up new business. Mac was short and stocky, just like his father, but with light blue eyes instead of brown. He was handsome, charming, outgoing, and could talk most people into most things. Mac had no accent, so the Gentiles seemed to take right to him. It didn't hurt that he had Sam's sense of humor and hail fellow well-met personality. Mac was a good brother to Miriam, although they were 4 years apart. Any man interested in her would have to go through Mac. Sam knew his son was as protective of the family as he was, and it felt good that his eldest son was following in his footsteps, learning the trade that would serve him well. He silently thanked his long-lost father for passing it on to him at a very young age. Sam's thoughts turned to Miriam, or Mimi, as he liked to call her. He worried about her breathing problem, but she was as smart as any man he knew, and it was she, more than himself or Gussie, who held the family together. For someone so young, she was remarkably sensitive to what other people needed and was always keen to make up for her mother's lack of interest in the family. It's too much of a burden. It might eventually wear her down. But how can I tell her to stop and enjoy being a child while she still can? Thought Sam. The truth is, I need her to help manage the family. He had several children to feed, and while Gussie fed them well, she was too ignorant to fill their heads with useful knowledge, and too cold to make them happy. He and Mimi would have to fill the gaps as long as either of them had the strength. Edna, his younger daughter, his canadle or dumpling, was already very pretty at age 10, red-haired and blue-eyed. Gussie told him Edna and Eddie sang songs as they skipped the three blocks from home to school. He wished he could watch them, but his work started early. There was so little joy in the household when Gussie was around. Everyone was so afraid of upsetting her that they stifled their humor and rambunctiousness, except when they couldn't help it, or Mac was around. Gussie loosened her stays, so to speak, when her eldest was home. Now Eddie, his tatala, his little papa, was his favorite. The first time he'd seen him, Sam felt a new feeling of strength rising from within him. He loved all his children intensely, but he thought of Eddie as a wonderful, unexpected gift. He felt like he wore an invisible shield to deflect the poisonous arrows Gussie shot at all of them. There were 10 children in Eddie's class. He could count them. Eddie knew his kindergarten teacher, Miss Marcus, liked him best. She always ran her fingers through his hair and let him sit on her lap and draw with crayons while he waited for someone to pick him up after school. He liked being the last one to be picked up. It meant more time with Miss Marcus. Miss Marcus watched Eddie's large brown eyes flicker between the other children and their mothers who burst into the classroom one after another, like princesses at a ball. He watched them reach for their children, hugging and kissing them, and asking what they did in school that day. She knew his sister, Miriam, the one he called Mimi, was a nice young lady who often left her high school at lunchtime to pick up Eddie, because their mother didn't like coming, or had no time to. Miss Marcus had only met her once. The woman hadn't been interested in what Eddie was learning. Instead, she wanted to know if he was behaving himself. Miss Marcus was plain-faced and squarely built, only recently out of teacher's college, She wore a bit of makeup to soften her rather masculine features. She'd chosen teaching because she loved children and didn't think she had much chance of having any of her own. She tried to content herself with the kindergarten children and did whatever she could for them. Some lacked basic needs like food, clothing, or like Eddie, motherly affection. "That's lovely, Eddie," said Miss Marcus as she scrutinized Eddie's latest drawing. It was a picture of a woman with curly hair and large eyes. "Is that me, Eddie? I think I'll have to take this one home. Is that all right? What a good artist you are." Eddie was pleased. Yesterday, Ma found him sitting under the kitchen table drawing. She made him get out from under the table and tore up the paper. He was drawing a horse he had seen on the street. It was pulling a cart for the milkman. He'd been intrigued by the horse because it was brown with white spots and seemed to look straight at him. The milkman had let him pet the horse, and the horse whinnied as if to say, "Thank you." Ma had yelled, "What are you doing, Eddie? Don't waste your time. Go out and play. You're getting in my way." Eddie waited until he was on the stoop to cry. He had gone under the table to hide from his mother, but she had found him and taken away the piece of paper he'd found on Pop's desk. He had hoped to give the picture to him. Eddie craved attention from Miss Marcus. Only Mimi and his father seemed to care for him as much as Miss Marcus did. She always smelled so nice and talked to the children in a calm voice, never shrill like Ma's. "So sorry I'm late, Miss Marcus," Miriam said breathlessly as she stood at the classroom door. For years, the asthma had been getting steadily worse. Still, she had run all the way to pick up Eddie after stopping by home to get the lunch she'd forgotten to take to her own school. She'd found Ma in the kitchen cooking. "What about Eddie? It's late, Ma. I thought you were picking him up today," she said to her mother's back, hunched over the stove. "I'm cooking. I can't leave the food on the stove. You go." There was no time to argue. Miriam's exacerbation made her breath come in short gasps, but she forced herself to ignore it so she could hurry to the school. She ran the few blocks, worried Eddie would be upset. She had to stop a couple of times to catch her breath, bend over, and grasp her legs with her hands to get more air. "Mimi," cried Eddie, "I thought you forgot me." "I can never forget you, my little Eddie. What did you learn in school today?" she said as she scooped him into her arms. She nodded to Miss Marcus, who was only a few years older than herself. Miss Marcus smiled in return. Neither of them needed words to explain her love for Eddie. "Look, I made a picture. Miss Marcus will take it home." "Yes, Eddie, I will. Thank you. I will look at it every day. Why don't you take a piece of paper and some crayons home with you? You can bring back the crayons tomorrow." Eddie's mood rebounded. He ran out of the classroom, leaving Mimi to follow. "Thank you, Miss Marcus. You know, Eddie really likes you." "I like him. He's a sweet boy." Embarrassed, she answered, "I'm sorry we're always late." "Don't worry, he's a pleasure." Eddie ran on ahead as Miriam, worrying about her asthma, slowed her steps, heedless of how late she would be getting back to school. All she could think about was breathing. When she was short of breath, panic overwhelmed all her other thoughts, except her concern for Eddie. "Come on, Mimi, let's go home. I'm hungry." "Slow down, Eddie. Wait for me." Eddie turned, walked back, grabbed her hand, and pulled her alongside him. "It's okay, Mimi. I'll help you." After walking a while, Eddie, leading her by the hand, stopped suddenly on the sidewalk and looked up at her. "I don't think I should bring the paper and crayons home. I didn't want to tell Miss Marcus." "Sure you should bring them home, Eddie. Maybe you can draw a picture to show me when I get home from school." Eddie didn't want to disappoint her, so he nodded his head and they resumed walking at a slightly quicker pace, so Miriam wouldn't miss school altogether. He decided to hide the paper and crayons under the cupboard in the living room. When Ma wasn't looking, he would draw a picture for Mimi. She dropped Eddie off at the house and left quickly to return to school. Miriam walked slowly for a few paces and then quickly for a few so she didn't run out of breath. She knew she'd be very late and would have to stay after school as punishment. She didn't mind missing portions of her class. She found school boring and preferred to read whatever she could lay her hands on at the library. She thought her mother was jealous because she'd never learned to read and thought books were mysterious and probably harmful. Sometimes she even hid the books Miriam brought home. Ma said she was raised to believe girls took care of the home and children while their husbands worked and prayed. Miriam didn't like housework other than cooking. She enjoyed cooking because she was intrigued by how bits and pieces of food added up to make a meal. She had to hand it to Ma for making an amazing dish out of one free marrow bone. Yet Ma was particular about following the old traditions about what you could eat and when. Miriam wanted to learn how to cook foods with more flavor and spice, and didn't care about preparing certain foods and meals for particular times of the day or for certain festival days. She was interested in the science of cooking, how a little of this and a lot of that could make a meal taste differently with the same ingredients. Miriam hoped to go to college instead of marrying right out of school, like so many girls did. College could open her mind to everything she saw she was missing, like science and other cultures. She thought she'd love to travel and see other countries for herself. She didn't want to marry until she finished college or at least learn more about the world. Miriam found it difficult to understand the girls around her. They all wore similar, colorfully printed cotton dresses and shoes with short heels. Someday, she thought, she would like to wear the tailored dresses worn by the rich, fashionable women she saw on the street. For now, she tried to accessorize with pins she placed on the tam she wore to school. She had one shaped like an arrow that she especially loved. As she slowly made her way back to school, Miriam thought about what it would be like to go to college. She talked to Pop about it. He wanted her to go, but the depression had ruled that out. She knew she would have to work to help support the family, but Pop promised she would graduate from high school, no matter what. Miriam stopped walking to bend over and take a few deep breaths. She felt tingling in her fingers, never a good sign. She knew it meant that there wasn't enough oxygen getting to the tips of her fingers. Miriam remembered the lunch she barely had time to grab on the way out the door to pick Eddie up at school. It was a homemade kasha knish, still warm and fragrant. She took a few nibbles, but found it hard to breathe, walk, and chew at the same time, so she put it back into its wax paper wrap. By the time Miriam got back to school, her breathing had calmed, and she no longer felt tingling in her fingers. Feeling calmer, she slipped in among her classmates, practically indistinguishable from one another, who were already seated at their desks. The teacher quietly walked to her desk and bent down to whisper so only Miriam could hear, "You will stay late today." At home, Eddie sat under the table drawing. Ma had barely said anything when Mimi dropped him off, but put a sandwich and a glass of milk on the table. Eddie ate in silence, brought his dishes to the sinks, and then went under the table. This time, Ma ignored his drawings. He was relieved. He felt sleepy and thought he'd probably close his eyes for a little while. Ma never asked him what he'd done at school, so he made sure to remember everything until Pop came home. He would sit on Pop's lap while he and Mac drank their coffee and Ma set the table. Sometimes, when the weather was hot, Mac took him outside to play catch after dinner. Other times, they threw a ball against the stoop. Eddie loved his big brother. Mac loved Eddie too, but the difference in their ages made it hard to spend much time together. Mac had become Pop's foreman. He preferred that to being a salesman. The men seemed to respect him far more than just being the boss's son. He put in a full day's work and pulled his weight. At work, Pop treated him like he did everyone else. Mac liked working for his father, but wanted more. He wanted to be in charge someday, free to make decisions without needing Pop's approval. He knew men his age who'd been working their way up in big companies before the Depression hit. He didn't know what happened to them, but imagine many were spending their days standing in bread lines or waiting for meals at soup kitchens. Mac knew he was lucky to have a job and to be learning from his father, but at some point he'd have to go out on his own. He was dating a woman he'd met through friends, thinking more and more about getting married and having a family. He felt late off the mark with that, too. Other guys his age were already married with kids on the way. Dottie might be the one, he thought. She was blonde with freckles and long dark eyelashes framing bright blue eyes. She didn't look Jewish, but her parents came from the old country about the same time his own had. Mac had invited Dottie to their home for their Passover Seder. She agreed because it was a long schlep back to her parents' home out on Long Island, and she wanted to see Mac and meet his family. She preferred to spend the night in the dormitory she shared with a few other girls, not far from where she worked as a secretary. Dottie had the second day of Passover off, but she planned to use it to catch up on her sleep. After dinner, Mac had walked Dottie back to the dormitory. She allowed him to kiss her and arrange the next date. "I'm living with my folks now, but I want to move out as soon as I have the cash," he told her, although she hadn't asked. "That's nice," she had said, but nothing more. "I mean, I won't always be living with them. I'm too old for that. I'm looking for another job in construction away from my father. I know enough. I think I can do it," he said in a rush, explaining what didn't yet need to be explained. She had given him a peck on the cheek then and turned to go into the building. He hadn't known what to think. What did she think, he thought. Papa always walked home from work with Mac. During their walks, Pop was like a stranger who suddenly becomes a close friend, changing his shape and tone to resume his roles as father and confidant. It took some time for Mac to adjust to this, but he understood why Pop had to be one way at work and another way outside of work. One evening, as they walked home for dinner, it was as if Pop could read his thoughts. He asked, "So isn't it about time you found a good woman and settled down? What about that cute girl you brought over for Pesach?" Mac matched Sam's directness with his own. "Would you like to get rid of me, Pop?" "Ha, of course not," Pop laughed, grabbing his son around the shoulders and hugging him to his chest. "I love you, Mac, but you need a life of your own. You're not getting any younger. We can still work together, or maybe you'd like to do something else." "How would you feel, Pop, if I worked for another company? Just to see what it's like," asked Mac tentatively. Pop removed his arm from Mac's shoulder, not in anger, but to gesture as he spoke. "I think that's a very good idea. It's time you learned how other companies work and took orders from a boss other than your father." The more Pop talked, the more he tended to fall back into Yiddish. The farther they walked away from the work site, as Sam changed back from boss to father, his language changed from an odd mixture of British and American English and Yiddish to only Yiddish. By the time they reached the house, it was as if an actor had shed his costume along the way. "Really, Pop, you aren't mad at me? I've thought about it a lot. I think Artie can be moved up to foreman. He's a good, honest man." "You may be right, Boychik. I'll talk to him soon. Now, about getting a wife." "Well, Pop," started Mac, matching his father's changes in language, "I think I like Dottie. It's still new, but I have a good feeling about her." "Gassedanken, my son, Gassedanken. She's a pretty girl, a zvezda madel, a nice girl," Pop said, patting Mac on the back as they approached the house. As they made their way to the fourth floor, Mac and Sam nodded and greeted their neighbors, some of whom hung over the banister or sat on the landings. "Moisha, how's your Sarah? Better, I hope." "Mazel tov, Adam. I hear little Shmuel's bar mitzvah in a few weeks." "Mrs. Hoffman, you're looking well." Pop smiled at everyone as he climbed the stairs with Mac, a step or two behind. Mac marveled at his father, who knew everything about everyone in the building. Unlike his friend's parents, it was not Ma who was the busybody, it was Pop. Everyone seemed to love him. Before they got the FHA work, when they had next to nothing, Sam repaired his neighbor's apartments for free. Miriam often went along, learning how to fix the plumbing and repair broken light fixtures. It amused Mac that the neighbors looked at her strangely, but he and Pop were proud of her. "Ah, my bride," said Sam as he entered the kitchen to peck Gussie on the cheek. She didn't pay any attention, and without turning from the stove, accepted the kiss like it was the brush of an insect. "Eddie, my bubba, how are you?" laughed Sam as he lifted Eddie from the floor where he'd been playing with Mac's old toy truck. Sam swung him around and then tossed him in the air to Mac, who resumed swinging. Eddie laughed and begged to continue after Mac pretended to drop him while gently placing his brother on the rag rug. Sam and Mac repeated the game with Edna, more gently and with less vigor. Edna had awaited her turn with grinning expectation. She too laughed and begged for more as Sam and Mac left the apartment to go down the hall to the bathroom to wash up for dinner. When they returned, Gussie said, "Miriam is late. Do you want to wait?" She was in the kitchen sweating from her exertions. "I'm starving, Ma. Can we start without her?" Let's eat Pops, said Mac. It's up to your father and stop calling him Pops. Who do you think you are? Show some respect. Are you a goyim now? Oh, Ma, said Mac, reaching down to kiss his mother on the cheek. Sorry, Ma, he said as he winked at Eddie and Edna, who giggled behind their hands. Miriam came in well after the chicken soup had gone cold. Sorry, Ma, Pop, I had to stay late because I was late getting back to school after lunch, she said in Yiddish, throwing an accusing glance at her mother. I thought Ma was picking up the bobola from school now, commented Sam as he finished the dregs of his soup, using a piece of challah to clean up the broth. I was cooking and couldn't leave, said Gussie, irritated at the veiled accusation. Sam glanced at Miriam in silent agreement that they would discuss this together at another time. I brought home some kugel. Trudy's mother made it. I didn't get time to finish my lunch today, so Trudy shared hers with me. I brought some home to share. It's really good, said Miriam in English. She placed a small packet of wax paper on the dinner table. Sam winked at her and spoke to Gussie. Ma loves kugel. New? Is it kosher? Is this friend Trudy from a kosher home? Snapped Gussie. Of course, Ma. Would I bring home something to share that wasn't kosher? Gussie grunted and helped herself to a portion of the kugel. She loved the mixture of noodles, sour cream, cottage cheese, and eggs. Trudy's mother had added raisins and cinnamon to increase the sweetness. After taking a bite, Gussie asked, Why kugel now? It's not a holiday. She took some more, shaking her head as she chewed.